Hey everyone, my name's Adam West. I play Adam West on the podcast, I'm Not Adam West. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast. Davis and I have been thrilled with the feedback we've been getting so far and can't believe that people actually want to listen to the weird things that we have to say. We've had a few people ask, how can they help with the show? So I wanted to give all of our listeners something that they could do that's super important and would be super helpful. We need people to go and leave reviews for us on iTunes or wherever you listen to your podcast at. The more views we get, the more visible our podcast becomes. So please, please help me live up to my namesake, Adam West, and go and review our podcast. Thanks. Hope you enjoy the episode.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the podcast where we talk about famous people and the more famous people's names who they might share. I'm talking about I'm Not Adam West. My name is Davis, and joining me, as always, is the Adam West. Adam, how you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Davis, I have a great story for you this week.
Tell me the story. Okay.
So, listeners of the show, we've talked about this in probably our first episode. Davis asked me what are some of the best reactions I've ever gotten from my name being called. You know, someone says my name. And, to start off, at this point in my life, I know when somebody knows what my name means.
Right.
it's you get the look in their eye, is he really saying that? And so,
right.
And not to be conceited, but I usually like to try to make it a joke or something. And so, in this instance, per se, she was looking down at her computer, checking me out of the hotel room, and she kind of paused for a second, and I knew exactly why she paused. And
right.
So I was like, yes, that is my name. It is Adam West. This girl might have been my age, could have been a few years younger, I don't know, but definitely not older.
Right.
She legitimately had just freaked out.
Really?
About my name. It was, and then proceeded to list off all of the Adam West's characters that he has played before.
What?
And I was just standing there, like, you know, smiling really nice because, yeah, you know, everyone does this, but she literally was like, this made her day. And
did she include you in the conversation, or did she just start like rambling off on all this Adam West trivia?
she did a little bit because she, you know, she wanted to know if I like being called it and those kind of things. But I mean, she knew the Adam West Batman character. She even mentioned him as Catman in The Fairly Odd Parents, which is the
hilarious
one that I always reference that no one remembers. And so she referenced it, and I was like, wow, okay, you probably have a weird shrine to Adam West in your house somewhere that we should discuss and figure out about.
Did you ask her about her dark secrets?
No. The polite thing to do is let your dark secrets lie, I think, but
I know it's a polite thing, but we got a podcast to run, man. We got to get that info.
I did let her onto the podcast and tell her, and she equally had the same response of, oh my gosh, it's a podcast about Adam West. And so, so hopefully she's out there listening. And girl from Houston. Yeah, checked out of Houston. So hopefully she's listening.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Houston girl, if you're listening, email us at inawcast.com and send us pictures of your Adam West shrine in your house.
What about you, Davis? What have you been up to lately?
Not much. In Dallas, doing some more camp. Not a whole lot going on except for just the normal day in, day out of running a camp for elementary school kids, which is some funny stuff. Fun,
exciting. Do you have any good? It's been a few weeks since we recorded. What's your like top store that you can tell me real quick?
That is a good question. I'm trying to think if there's anything. Usually when camp, it's stuff that campers say. That's pretty funny. This isn't necessarily something they said or did, but it was just like, okay, this is elementary school. But one camper came to check in, like their first day of check in, and they had, I don't know if they won it at the fair or what, but a enormous stuffed monkey on their back, just brought it to camp with them for like, that's not, we don't have any
like
sort
Yoda
of
Yoda style.
Yeah. Sort of like Yoda style, but it was like bigger than she is. And we don't have any animal theme days, or there's no reason why she would have brought that other than she just probably wanted to. So that was kind of funny and just like, okay, yep, little kids are going to do what they're going to do. And they don't really care what you think or what the societal norms are. If they want to bring a giant monkey on their back, they're going to do that. So it's like just been sitting at camp all this whole week. It's just kind of hanging out, this monkey. I keep calling it Kolba from the War for Planet of the Apes movie. Kolba. Mm.
And so, you're the only one that knows that reference, I'm sure.
Yeah, totally. I go and I like kneel down and ask it, you know, in supplication. I put my hand out and it hasn't answered me yet. So I'm still waiting for its approval. Okay, Adam, I have a question for you. What do Oro Blanco grapefruits, the NAACP, and the highest grossing films of all time have in common?
That sounds an awful lot like James Cameron.
Well, you're right. It is James Cameron. How about that?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. James Cameron has made his way around. I looked up some... Okay. James Cameron, way more interesting of a guy than I thought he was.
I know, I'll just right? Say he's, like that. He's got some interesting stuff going on. It's yeah. not all just movies and lights, camera, action with this dude.
Yes. So James Cameron, for those who don't know, he is... easily the highest grossing director, I think, of all time. If just to name a few of his incredible accomplishments, I mean, he did Avatar, Titanic, he started the Alien series. All of these movies are just like kind of blockbuster, like movies that have changed and shaped the genre and what they are. I mean, we talked about this a few episodes ago, I think. I've never seen Titanic.
I know. Come on, you got to get on it.
I might go watch it now.
You need to. It's an American classic.
Well, funny that you should say it's an American classic, because James Cameron was actually born in Canada.
Oh, another Canadian.
Yes, there's way more prevalent than I thought. So he was born in Ontario, Canada in 1954. And he didn't really start out in this idea of, you know, being a film writer or anything like that. His interest was in physics, actually. And so he went to California State and then switched to English before actually dropping out of school. And then he kind of like... went around and did some like odd jobs. He actually was a truck driver, which I thought was kind of interesting.
Hilarious, yeah.
Yeah, so he did his first credit was as an art director building like miniature sets on a film. And then he got this. I thought this was a great fact. He actually, his first experience as a director was on a film called Piranha Take Two, The Spawning.
Perfect.
Which, yeah, just in its name itself, you know that's a five-star movie. He was fired in his first 2 weeks of directing this film.
No way.
So, yeah, the great James Cameron's first was a loss. So, in 1984, he kind of makes his first... he writes and directs his first what will be, like, genre-changing film, The Terminator.
Yeah.
And, I mean, if even if you've never seen The Terminator, everyone knows I'll Be Back.
You know I'll Be like, Back. You know...
Everyone
you
knows.
You know Hasta La Vista, baby. You know a bunch of the lines. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so, first out... that was his first big hit, obviously. I mean, that went on to spawn I think we're at five right now.
Yeah, I think so.
Genesis. Yeah. So he kind of stayed in the sci-fi fiction action genre with like Aliens. He did The Abyss, which are awesome movies in themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, if Aliens is one of the scariest monster films ever made.
Yes.
Terminator 2. And then, of course, in 1997, he wrote and directed Titanic, which he has a funny quote. I'm going to butcher it, but it's he called it the like $500 million romance movie that he made, or love novel that he made, you know.
Yeah. Which is, that's interesting that he, I don't think I realized that he went from like sort of intense action sci-fi, and then it was sort of a hard turn into this romance, you know, like pull you up from by your bootstraps, poor guy with the rich girl. That seems like a pretty hard turn in his like career.
Yeah. And for him to like have wrote that too, I always kind of assumed that the Titanic was like based on a book or something. You know, it's obviously based in pseudo fact.
Right.
I didn't think he wrote it, honestly. And so, So after Titanic, he went on to create Avatar, but Titanic was the highest grossing film of all time until he came out with Avatar.
Until he broke his own record.
Broke his own record, created Avatar, which was genre changing and the 3D world as well.
Yeah.
I mean, the 3D film world it kind of hit its stride with Avatar of like, this is how this process can look.
Yeah.
He has grossed his movies collectively have grossed $6 billion.
It's unbelievable.
That's insane to me. I did look up how much he got paid for Avatar. $350 million. $350 million for that movie. So, I mean, he's a wealthy guy.
Yes.
For sure.
Absolutely.
I was reading about how he kind of is seen in Hollywood, and he's kind of decisive on people's stance. A lot of people say that he is really hard to work with, they like he loves his movie so much and that it is an art behind it that he will almost like a Stanley Kubrick style of just being so nitpicky. Notoriously, on one of his sets, whenever someone's cell phones would go off, he would nail them into the wall if they went on while they were filming.
Like throw the phone into the wall? No, or like hit
nail
the person?
The phone into the wall, like hang it on the wall.
Oh, like physically, yeah. Like, oh, wow.
So he takes...
That's dense.
So there's a few people spoke out about him about just being like very just I don't want to call him difficult to work with. I want to call him very like I'm here to get this done right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, very particular. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's been effective. It's worked. He's grossed $6 billion mm-hmm. and has two of the highest grossing films of all time. So hey, the method, there is a method to that madness and it's working.
Yeah. So he's also known as a deep sea diver, like aficionado,
yep.
which I thought was yep. great, but interesting guy nonetheless.
Okay. Fascinating. That's James Cameron. That's the one that we all know. We all are aware of James Cameron, or at least if you are in the film industry, you know who James Cameron is. You've probably heard of those movies. But Adam, I think there are some other James Camerons who deserve a little bit of a shout out here, deserve some credit here. But there's a James Malcolm Cameron, who was born in 1930, who is a British forensic scientist. He went to the University of Glasgow in Scotland. His nickname was Taffy Cameron. I don't know why, but that says it on his Wikipedia page.
You said Taffy as in Laffy yeah, Taffy?
Like in the Shake That Laffy Taffy Cameron. Taffy Cameron, he ended up becoming a forensic scientist, and so he was involved in some high-profile investigations, including some a death of a prisoner. He was a leading prosecution witness in a certain case in 1972. So he just kind of he found some recognition in the field of being a forensic scientist, but there was some controversy. He made a mistake or two that maybe had certain cases go certain ways. So he's definitely kind of he's a little bit of an enigma, or at least, you know, who knows if he really deserves positive recognition, but he's known in some capacity as a forensic scientist. And then the last one I'll mention is James Cameron, who was actually Mark James Walter Cameron, who was born in 1911. He was a British journalist. He worked for some Scottish newspapers. He was rejected for military service in World War II, but he reported on the Bikini Atoll nuclear experiments.
Interesting. The ones in... Yeah. Hawaii, right? That's near Hawaii, right?
Yeah, in the Bikini Atoll, yeah. So he, from seeing that, he actually turned into a pacifist. He saw kind of the destructive nature of nuclear weapons, turned into a pacifist, and he was a founding member of the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. So he was actually so affected that he went on to be a part of this campaign for people to disarm their country's nuclear weaponry. In 1965, found his way, somehow got into North Vietnam, for interviews and photos with Ho Chi Minh and some other leaders. So he was kind of a dedicated and seems like pretty resourceful journalist. Really, really interesting guy. He was kind of multi-talented journalist, playwright, author. He was involved in broadcast journalism as well. So just kind of an interesting man. Anyway, that's Mark James Walter Cameron, or James Cameron the journalist.
Okay, that guy sounds really interesting. Yeah, I would very like to hang out with that guy. Is he still living?
He is not still living. He died in 1985.
Okay, cool. I mean, not cool. Unfortunate. Sad.
Wow. Insensitive, Adam.
All right, segue into my first guy. So,
okay.
I found a few James Camerons that I liked as well. The first one is James Cameron. He was a Union colonel for the Union Army, which is, I say that with a very strong asterisk around his name. I don't want to speak ill of the dead, but I do. There, you'll see how the story unfolds. So, James Cameron was born March 1st in 1800 in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania. So his parents were Charles and Martha, and his older brother was Simon, which we'll kind of get into him in a second.
Okay.
So his family moved, father died, and most families back then had more than one kid. This one happened to have 8 children. So it was her mom, 8 kids, including James and Simon. And so they were kind of like, hey, you're the oldest. You got to go make your way, fend yourself.
Yeah.
Cameron was quoted by saying on his 47th birthday that he has been a cowboy, a plowboy, a coyer, a blacksmith, a tanner, a tailor, a printer, a brewer, a contractor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The list goes on and on. So, and this kind of will lead into how his life plays out. At age 18, he worked the same print shop with his brother Simon, and this was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and so they printed off a few editorials. So he kind of studied law, and actually the office of the future President James Buchanan.
Yep.
Like his office before the government like kind of contracted out.
Right.
Again, having kind of a slew of jobs, he married a widow in 1829. I mean, he's progressively, you know, picking himself up by the bootstraps kind of guy.
Right.
Until 1847, he accompanied troops into the Mexican-American War. Now, when I say he accompanied, he was not a soldier in his own right.
Right.
He was what's called a sutler, or it's like a trader who goes with these soldiers to like help, you know, when they're off town trading and things like that. So this gets him up into the point of the Civil War.
Right.
Again, having like he was in a militia, but there's not like too much military experience in his background. And so he becomes a colonel. I don't know how he jumped ship, but he's also so he becomes a colonel in the Union Army under the 79th New York Volunteer Infantry. And so, and the big reason in which he was bestowed this is because his brother Simon, who we brought up earlier, he's become the Secretary of War for the Union Army. And so I think that he kind of bestowed upon his brother this.
Some nepotism going on there.
A little bit of nepotism going on. And so a cool thing about the 97th New York Regiment. It was also known as the Highlanders because the initial corps was comprised mostly of Scotsmen or men with like Scottish descent.
Right.
And so that they called themselves the Highlanders because that's what you do.
Let's go.
And so he kind of took over this regiment. And so I hate to say this, but his death is kind of the most interesting thing about this.
Okay. You know?
So they begin the advance that would lead up to the first battle of Bull Run. And he's in one of the regiments going down there. And so the battle goes real bad for Union soldiers.
Yeah, right.
And so Cameron is noted as being one of the guys who was very gusto. Like, hey, we're taking the hill. Let's go, my brave Highlanders, and advance the line. Like, he was all about it. He was quoted as saying, "Scots, follow me," like, loudly and just roaring them on.
Right.
Which is unfortunate, because as much as that does, it doesn't stop bullets.
True.
And so, it said that he was crossing a line and was just hit and mowed down with this barrage of Confederate fire. So he basically was killed instantly, but you know, they tried to get him back, save his life. And at this point, it's just like unfortunate after unfortunate after unfortunate. So he's picked up. They basically like demand one of the carts that are carrying the wounded to carry him and to like cart him back off to like the medical facilities. And the driver is like, no, like triage, there's more people that I can save than this guy. But they demand that he, you know, like tell him who he is, kind of the brother of the Secretary of War. Like, hey, you have to get this guy out.
Right.
So he does, and then the Confederates commandeer that wagon.
Oh no!
And so basically, take it, kick everybody out. Which again, I'm assuming Cameron's probably already dead at this time. Yeah. Anyway, he not a lot of cares about it.
Right.
There's a note that was sent. I just like love the kind of cheek and tongue of this whole thing. Union Army sends an addressed letter to the Confederates to say to whom it may concern. And the Confederates didn't like the wording on the paper. So it says to whom they might concern. They wrote back, "We are not really concerned about his body." And so they're just like, nah, we're good. So he sits, he lays there for days. I mean, just eventually they go and find him. They can kind of pick him up from Some of the things that he was wearing, obviously his medals and badges and whatnot. Yeah, that's kind of like how he ended. It was just this like crappy ending to a guy who, frankly, probably shouldn't have been fighting in this war in the first place.
Yeah,
probably
seriously.
A little too old for it. A man who did a lot, who picked himself up, and then was forgotten about on the ground.
Well, there you go. You know what? All of your life, it comes down to one moment, and sometimes you blow it.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's James Cameron.
Who do you got for us, Davis?
Yes, I do have a couple that I'm excited about. I'll start with James Cameron, the missionary. James Cameron, the missionary. So James Cameron, he was born in 1799 and he died in 1875. He was a Scottish missionary. He had a background in carpentry and he spent most of his life, actually for 23 years of his life, he served as a missionary in Madagascar.
Okay.
He was, like I said, he was born in Scotland. He actually was a descendant of a MacLean chief. And so he basically spent some time in Manchester, England. He developed some machinery that he was going to go and install in Madagascar to kind of modernize their production of cotton yarn, right? So he's going to go and kind of set up some machinery, help them, you know, bring them into the, you know, the 21st century. So he goes to Madagascar and he builds the first Christian temple and also the first Western style school in Madagascar. And then in 1826, he introduces brick making to Madagascar. So that he kind of shows them how to make bricks, and bricks actually become used heavily in a new architectural style that crops up in Madagascar that is largely based on his own brick house in Ambatonakanga, Madagascar.
Nice.
And then he kind of explodes technologically a little bit. He oversees the installation of the first printing press on the island. They used that to print a translation of the Bible in the language of Madagascar. And he also was a key contributor in the manufacture of gunpowder and the introduction of hydraulic power, which is drawn from a lake that they built so that they could get hydraulic power from it. So he sort of comes in and essentially engineers his way into being, you know, bringing Madagascar into the 21st century, giving them some updated technology and giving them jobs, really kind of bringing them on board with some of this, you know, modern machinery and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's James Cameron. He kind of invested in the country. He went and he built and he brought people alongside him and he kind of engineered new, interesting and helpful trades for the people there. And so I'm wondering, like, James Cameron, we know James Cameron, the filmmaker. I wonder if, one, I'm curious to know what the sort of public opinion in Madagascar is of James Cameron, if they see him as helpful and someone who, like, brought technology, or if he was, you know, an invader or an outsider or kind of stuck his nose in where it didn't belong. So, number one, I'd be curious to know that. But two, regardless, either way, he has definitely had a significant influence on the country, both technologically, but also with trade and, you know, bringing a new religion to the country. So I wonder if in Madagascar or, in some of the places that he stayed and taught, if his name, the name James Cameron would bring up the idea of him over the idea of, you know, the filmmaker. So anyway, that's James Cameron, the missionary.
I thought you were about to pitch the movie. You know, I was wondering. It kind of felt like you were.
I think you definitely could. I think you could pitch the movie. I think that if I were going to pick somebody to play James Cameron, you know, the missionary in a movie, I think it's the guy. Who's the guy from, like, Across the Universe and 21? Oh, Jim Sturgess. I think Jim Sturgess would make a killer James Cameron, the missionary in the film. So,
yeah.
I think, again, three weeks in a row, we got to pitch a movie. That's what we do based on these guys. But I think that's part of, Adam, like, why I'm enjoying doing this podcast so much, is because we get to see these guys who are kind of lost and overshadowed by the, you know, just because of the fact they share a name with somebody, quote unquote, more famous. But I really enjoyed learning some of these stories and, like, learning about some of these men and women that are, you know, connected to these people and the stories of them investing in certain things in their life and working hard towards goals. And I think it's awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I have another guy for you if you want to hear about him.
Perfect. I would love to.
So this guy, this James Cameron, is a little different than how we normally do our characters. So
is it more different than King Steven from the last episode? Because I feel like I really zagged on him there.
Yeah, well, I guess it's different in a personality type than anything.
Okay, fair.
Yeah. Okay, so he is an American civil rights activist. He was born in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
Did he play that sport?
No.
Did he invent? Wait, hang on. Can I guess? Did he invent lacrosse?
Oh no, he did not invent lacrosse. Okay. But that would be fun. I don't think the British would let us walk away with that game because that's for sure a British game.
I do not think the British invented lacrosse. I'm so sorry that I'm cutting into your James Cameron time, but I have to look it up right now and see where it's invented.
Because I feel
like it's French.
Okay.
Ah, wait, hang on. British? Oh, hang on. It's played as early as 17th century.
Canadians?
Part of the cultural tradition of the Iroquois Indians inhabiting what is now New York and Pennsylvania. It's not just American. It's Native American. And also there's a traditional Aboriginal Canadian version. So North America, baby.
I did say Canada there at the end. I did try to slip that in there.
You did try to slip it in there, but it was too late. You already said England. So North America, get at me, Elizabeth. Come on.
Okay, so, well, it could have been invented here in La Crosse, Wisconsin, I suppose.
That's true.
So, he was born to James Herbert Cameron and mother Vera Carter. Father left, kind of a rough upbringing. They moved to Birmingham, Alabama, and then moved again into Indiana. Okay. That's where his mother remarried. So, when he was 16 years old, his life kind of, like, fell upon an incident that would definitely change the course of his life and dictate what he did with his future. So,
when
James was 16, he went out with a few older African American friends, and their idea was to rob a young white man. That was their plan. It ended up in the scuffle that the boy, Claude Dieter, was killed by these boys.
Wow.
And his girlfriend, who was there at the time, claimed that she was raped, which actually ended up being like she lied about that.
Yeah.
They were like brought on charges that night, actually. And James Cameron claimed that he was not there for the death, that he had not been present for that, and he had actually left before that happened. That night, after they were like convicted, a lynch mob showed up at the courthouse or at the jail and pulled them out of jail and hung the other two boys.
Wow.
They went to hang James after, and he was, rope around the neck, and some woman in a nameless woman in the crowd spoke out for him and said, like, hey, he's innocent, basically. So they took the noose off and he was like tried. So James was sentenced to prison. Was being charged an accessory before the fact. He served 4 years in state prison there. So again, this kind of like goes on to like affect the rest of his life. So James Cameron is the only known survivor of a lynching because of this.
No way.
Like only known American survivor of a lynching. And so he said that he had scars from the noose for years and problem with speaking and whatnot. But after his release from prison, so this would put him about the age of 20, he moved to Detroit, Michigan, where he attended Wayne State University and pursued a career as a boiler engineer.
Way to go, James.
He has started multiple chapters of the NAACP, and actually Indiana pardoned him in 1991 from the crimes that he committed. I thought another interesting thing about James Cameron, he and his wife went to a memorial in Israel called the Vad Hashem, which is a World Holocaust Center.
Yeah.
And so based off of that, they actually founded America's Black Holocaust Museum in 1988. And this was a museum dedicated to African Americans in the United States from slavery through lynching and just like the abuses up until the 21st century and through the civil rights movement. It went on until his death in 2006, and unfortunately it was closed due to just money management issues. But it actually reopened again 2012 as a virtual museum on his birthday. So just like a kind of a cool life. I mean, I honestly, I would love to talk to this guy because the things that he's gone through, I mean, again, being the only known survivor of a lynching is crazy. And so just to be able to speak on that and, you know, and seeing the life that he is kind of, you know, could have let things lead him down a different path, but, you know, picked up and, you know, sought out the betterment in people. And so,
and not even not just like let him down a different path, but he could have taken the circumstances that happened to him and the things that happened to him and sort of shut down from them, right? Like that would have been enough excuse for anybody. I think people would be totally understanding if he had like laid low and not wanted to stir up trouble because of, I mean, that is a traumatic incident. And so like, yes, he tried to rob this guy. That's like wrong and bad, but the response was so over the top and so drastic and so traumatic probably to him that he, I think very reasonably could have shut down and tried to avoid or run away from those issues, or at least having to face them again out of fear or whatever. But the fact that he like turned it on his head and he went and he pursued like not justice in the sense of revenge, but justice of like, hey, let's make sure that the civil rights of people, that people as citizens and their rights and what they are owed by society was like followed up on. I think that's a cool testament to his character and who he is. And you're right. Like what a crazy story to be able to tell, like, hey, I survived like a lynch mob and here's why this is important. It's not just important philosophically, but it's important because of like, this is how it affected me personally.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Interesting.
Yeah. To really just put a spotlight on that. Yeah. I mean, I respect this guy a lot, honestly. Think he, to go from to what he did and still kind of come out on top with like a good like motivation is just, this is cool. So
okay,
yeah, James Cameron, man.
Awesome. James Cameron, there you go. All right, Adam, I've got one more James Cameron and then we'll wrap up.
Let's hear it.
This James Cameron is a little more whimsical, a little more fun maybe than the last James Cameron, and then a few of the James Camerons we've done. This guy is, he's got a career that I've never heard of, or kind of a aspect of his career. He's not a canoeist. He has nothing to do with the water. He is, so James Cameron, or Jim Cameron, James W. Cameron.
Okay. He was born Jam Cameron? Like jam?
No, but hang on, put a pin in that.
Okay.
Jimbo, born in 1913, he was a professor of horticultural science. He was a geneticist, but what he's most prominently known for, what he's most well known for, is that he is a citrus breeder.
Oh.
So this guy, he generates new strains of and families of citrus fruits, right? Okay. As I've been looking at this, there's a lot that goes into this. And I would assume with anything, with any animal or plant, like the genetics behind, you know, crossbreeding these certain traits that you want that are desirable is important. But I don't think I had any idea. It makes sense, but I had no clue that it would be specific to just citrus for anybody. So he's a geneticist, he's a citrus breeder. And he taught and worked in the University of California. This is the most hardcore name for this thing that I can think of. It's called the Citrus Experiment Station, which sounds like one of the hatches in Lost. It sounds like they would find this. They would find the citrus station. And what it would be is it would be breeding citrus fruits, but so that those citrus fruits could transport your consciousness into other bodies and other timelines, et cetera, right? Like that you take a bite of this lemon, you put it in your iced tea, and then all of a sudden now you're John Locke. And or are you? Who knows?
Yeah. I was thinking it sounded very much like a place at Willy Wonka, which also could be all those other things that you just said, because he was insane. So,
well, you know, Lost is a sequel to Willy Wonka, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Willy Wonka is the island.
Okay. I thought it was Purgatory for some reason, but you know what? Willy Wonka sounds more fun.
It's the same thing. It's all the same thing. It is Willy Wonka. Willy Wonka is Purgatory. How else do you explain the creepy boat ride with the centipedes and stuff? If not, that is, hey, on one side of this is Candyland. That's heaven. On the other side of this is the centipedes crawling all around. That's hell. anything in between where you are right now in this tunnel, purgatory, lost citrus experiment station, right? It's all the same thing. Don't let anyone tell you otherwise. That's truth. You're out of here first. So James Cameron worked there, and together with a guy named Robert Soust, was kind of his long-term, co-laborer, I guess, in the citrus fruit industry. He developed a couple of different, types of grapefruit was kind of one of his claims to fame. One is called the Oro Blanco, and one of them is called the Mellow Gold. The other things that he's done, he, co-authored volume two of a 5-volume series called The Citrus Industry. I'm not kidding. That's a real thing. It is literally considered the Bible of citrus farming. Since 1944, like I said, he was born in 1913 and he died in 2010. But between now and 1944, with his attendance, 484 hybrid citrus seedlings have been developed. 484 different kinds of hybrid citrus seedlings.
Wow.
So his work has impacted, you know, the everyday breakfast of the American, probably, with these wonderful grapefruits. The place that he worked, the California, University of California Citrus Experiment Station, affected literally the world, like globally helped West Africa with some hunger and poverty, and just in general, like very, very specialized in a certain unique area, but I mean, improved the quality of the world because he improved the quality of grapefruit, right? Like it's a narrow focus. It's a small area, but like this man like came into the world, and when he left the world, like we have a couple of types of grapefruit that are a little bit better than when he came into it, which is kind of a cool, that's a cool legacy to leave, even though it's small and even though it's insignificant. Like that one person who loves grapefruit and then they have to go find the Oro Blanco, like their life is made a quantity better by the like dedicated work of one person. So it's cool.
I can't not say this, but you definitely see the fruits of his labor.
And that's it. That's this week, ladies and gentlemen. That's I'm Not Adam West. Thank you for listening. I can't believe that I didn't see the opportunity for all these fruit puns.
It was there so long ago.
I'm glad that you are listening and that you're aware because that was perfect.
Okay. Let me give you – so before we go and talk about who we think should be the right James Cameron, I said at the top of the episode – but James Cameron is a lot cooler than I thought he was.
Yeah.
And so I got some fun facts for you that I really want to share. Big nautical guy. Loves like deep sea diving. So in 2012, James Cameron reached the bottom of the Mariana Trench, which is the deepest part in the ocean, if you don't know this, with the Deep Sea Challenger submarine. He is the first person to do this in a solo descent and only the third person in the world to do so.
Okay, so he's like legit. It's not just that he's interested. He's like legit at this.
Yeah, he's like...
Or at least rich enough to buy a heavy-duty enough submersible to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know what the difference is.
A little bit of both, for sure. I mean, he spent some of those millions of dollars to get this submersible.
Okay, but crazy.
And I just like this one. This one is probably the most fun for me. And this is according to James Cameron himself. He got his big break while doing pickup shots on a movie called Galaxy of Terror. It came out in 1981. He was shooting scenes with a dismembered arm teeming with maggots. So prosthetic arm, obviously. And they used mealworms instead of maggots. And so in order to get them to move, he hooked up like an AC power cord to the arm. And an unseen assistant would plug it in while the film was rolling. And then that would like kind of jitter them into coming, you know, moving around.
Yeah.
So two producers were strolling through, and when Cameron yelled action, the worms began to writhe on cue.
Yeah. Okay.
And when he yelled cut, the worms stopped.
Nice.
The producers were so amazed by his directing prowess that they began talking to him about bigger projects. So
that's like so smart. People like that. That's like the people who invented Uber and like things that I'm like, why? It's one of those things where it's like seems so simple and obvious. Like I have a cool creative idea like that, and they just don't come to me, you know? Like it's like, how are you so smart and so creative and able to make that happen in such a short time frame or limited resources? Just be able to think through, I need these worms to move. What do I use? Electricity. Let's harness electricity and do this. That's awesome.
Okay, Davis, who's your pick for James Cameron?
Oh man, this one is This one might be the toughest one, or at least not the toughest one to decide, maybe, but I think lots of guys that we've talked about have very equal claims to being highly regarded. I don't know. I think I understand why James Cameron, the director, is the most famous. I don't know that I can necessarily knock him for being that way. I think one that I would be that I am curious again, I think it depends on how the people see him, but I think the missionary James Cameron, just for the effect that he had on like an entire group of people, if he is like seen as if that was seen as like a positive beneficial influence, I can see how the people of Madagascar would recognize that name, James Cameron, over the director, potentially.
Yes.
I am so curious. I think that's the one that I could say in that on that island, like in that history, maybe it's that James Cameron. That's what I would say, but I don't know if there's one that that overthrows James Cameron, the director, for me.
Okay, solid answer. I would have to agree. I it's not a contest for me. I mean, it's James Cameron for sure. Yeah. But the one real big outlier for me is the James Cameron that we know and love is still alive.
Yeah.
And, I mean, he's already done so much amazing things. I mean, not even just in the film where he's clearly, like, changed how we film, but from that and his just like entrepreneurial work, I mean, he's done a lot to try to put a focus on like climate change and like the waters. I mean, that's him deep sea diving is not just a, you know, let's go have fun in the water. Yeah. Like he's like has a goal there as well. And so all that to say, James Cameron, it's a cool guy. Glad to know the things I do about him.
There you go. This was a really solid crew of James Camerons. I like very much enjoyed learning about these guys, especially Jam Cameron. That's why we call him Jam, because of all the citrus fruits.
All the citrus. He's got
orange marmalade. Paddington, Paddington 2, if you haven't seen them, brilliant films. Check them out. Shameless plug.
They're good. Yes. Okay. Well, I think that's going to do it for us, Davis.
Please like, share, subscribe on Facebook, on iTunes. Leave us a review. That's going to help us out a ton. We are super appreciative of y'all for listening. We're grateful to you.
Yeah. And I mean, as David said, this is, you know, this has been a fun new experience for both of us. And we've, you know, this is episode 5 for us now. And so we're both like, man, this is like meaning something to us now. So thanks for listening. We'd like to thank Broke for Free for their song Luminous, letting us use it up for our podcast. So until next time, we'll see y'all later.